Morning, everybody. It's Dave Weiner here, and this is a Morning Coffee Notes. It's December 16th, 2005, and I'm still in New Orleans. This is my last day of four days in New Orleans, and I just wanted to try to put. I've been talking to various people back home about the experience here. And I wanted to try to put some of those thoughts down into a podcast while they're still fresh in my mind, and I'm sure that there'll be more to say later about this. I guess first of all, there were two. I went to Biloxi, Mississippi yesterday, Biloxi and Gulfport, and so there are two scenarios, and they're actually fairly different. What happened in Biloxi was more the direct result of the hurricane than what happened in New Orleans, which was more the aftermath of the hurricane. So first let me talk a little bit about what happened in Biloxi. It basically got the direct hit from Hurricane Katrina. Katrina actually came inland, crossed actually the eye of the hurricane, crossed land twice, once all the way down at the mouth of the Mississippi River, which is quite a bit south of New Orleans and Biloxi. If you can picture the map of Louisiana is sort of like a big boot, and there's the Delta, which is, you know, very sort of uninhabited land, or not very inhabited, and that's like due south of Biloxi. Actually, it's more due south of the Mississippi-Louisiana state line. And so the hurricane came across there, and then came across at roughly the Mississippi-Louisiana state line, and which is where there are a bunch of resort sort of bedroom community, not big cities. And I didn't go to those places, so I can't tell you what that looks like. But Biloxi was in the east of the eye of the hurricane, which is actually where the greatest water damage occurs in a hurricane, because the way a hurricane swirls, it brings water in land to the east of the eye, and then tends to bring water off land to the west of the eye, which was more where New Orleans was. And that's why New Orleans didn't suffer that much. I mean, to say it didn't suffer that much damage, you have to look at the pictures I have generally don't show the hurricane damage. There was a substantial amount of hurricane damage, trees down, houses sort of blown, in some cases blown apart, in areas where there were no flooding, where there was no flooding. Some houses severely damaged, but that wasn't the main cause of the damage here. Whereas in Biloxi, there was a 25 plus foot storm surge. Now, try to picture 25 feet of water. You know, if you go swimming in a pool, it has 10 feet of water, that's over your head, and you might think of that as deep. Many houses are not even 25 feet tall. So 25 feet of water, if you're built right on the coast, which in Gulfport and Biloxi, there was a lot built. That was where the resorts and the gambling casinos and some very, very nice houses were built right on Highway 90, which is the coastal route, which runs right alongside the Gulf of Mexico. You can see also in some of the pictures I have, and these pictures of the bridge that goes across the bay that's just to the east of Biloxi, I don't know the name of the bay, the Highway 90 bridge got pretty well totaled there. So you can see the 25 foot storm surge completely overwhelmed that bridge. And so where the hurricane hit land in Gulfport and Biloxi, you don't see houses that were wrecked and that need to be torn down. You see lots without houses on them. And then you go a little bit further inland, then you see houses that were that were wrecked and devastated, much like the houses in New Orleans East or in the Lakeview section of New Orleans, where the levees broke, where the violence of the water wasn't quite the issue, but rather the depth of the water. And but unlike in New Orleans, the water in Biloxi receded quickly within a few hours after it came on shore. 4 hours or so, 5 hours after the water was gone. But the devastation, as you could see in the pictures that I took, and they're linked to from today's www.scripting.com. Actually, it was yesterday's, which December 15th, and the day before the 14th. You'll see them there on Flickr, and the subjects are New Orleans and then Biloxi slash Gulfport. So both areas are going to have long periods of recovery, but New Orleans being a big city, and Biloxi and Gulfport are not big cities. And it's hard to say this. I mean, I don't, not certainly not an expert. We got caught in the traffic jam in Biloxi. There's a big Air Force base in the middle of Biloxi, Keesler Air Force Base. I don't know. The feeling that I got was is that their recovery, while their devastation was more complete, the net effect was still the same, where the houses and the buildings and businesses were destroyed. The same thing happened in New Orleans, except there was more stuff left around afterwards. But New Orleans is a much bigger place, and it's the largest city. This side of Houston, and then the west of Atlanta and south of Memphis. It's a center, although now it is the third largest city in Louisiana. So it is a small place with population estimates between 60,000 and 100,000 people. I was having dinner the other night with a few people, and one of them was from Madison. I commented, well, New Orleans is now a Madison-sized town, and she said, "Well, no, Madison has 250,000 people. New Orleans is about the size Madison was when I was at Madison. Madison has grown quite a lot since the '70s, and I can testify to that. I was in Madison about a year ago, and it has absolutely grown at a huge pace." And New Orleans is a small place by comparison, and it's a place that is going to have a major, major, major struggle in front of it. And however, it's a very interesting place to be, right? I mean, always New Orleans has always been an interesting place, but it's interesting for a whole different set of reasons now, and that is that, and this is something. I don't know if I ever thought about this. Certainly never had an appreciation for this, that cities have momentum. And when a city like New Orleans loses all of its momentum, it doesn't just come back. For example, there are very few restaurants open in New Orleans. And this is a city, of course, that's famous for its food. One of the reasons why the restaurants are not open is that there aren't enough people to work in the restaurants. And so everywhere you go, you see signs from businesses that we're hiring, and they're on curtailed hours because, and their menus are limited at the restaurants because they just don't have enough people. There's no lack for customers. There's plenty of customers, people who would like to eat at the restaurants. Same thing's true. You don't hear a lot of sirens in the city, and people say when they heard a siren, they were very, very happy to hear that, and they explained it by saying, well, wow, somebody urgently wants to get from one place to another and has a reason to do that. And that struck me as odd because this is a city, and New Orleans always was a loud city, lots and lots of noise, not today. Today, New Orleans is a quiet city, We were driving down Canal Street, which is the main street of downtown, the central business district, and usually it's bumper to bumper traffic. Now, this was a midday on a weekday with nice weather, okay? I mean, it was actually an absolutely gorgeous sunny day, and middle of the week, Wednesday, middle of the day, right around lunchtime, and there were most of the stores were boarded up. There were a few people hanging out on the streets. There were some construction crews here and there. It was not a city at work. Absolutely was not a city at work. And then the question is, well, how does a city actually get itself going again? And I'm not sure that there's anybody that knows how to do that, or anybody who has that as their profession, or an academic who studies that, because when was the last time that happened in North America? Now, it has happened in Europe. It happened after World War II, where cities were utterly destroyed. There have been some cases like Charleston, South Carolina, and Hurricane Hugo, where there was large devastation. Maybe there they know, and I'd be very interested in hearing from people from South Carolina that might be able to explain, well, how does a city get its momentum back, and then therefore, what is the probability? This is what a lot of people would like to know here in New Orleans. Will it come back? And nobody knows the answer. The people, of course, who are here now, very, very, very much want it to come back. you have to really want to be here because there isn't a lot for people to do. And then people are very tenuous and tentative about their commitment to New Orleans. You hear people say, I'm here for now, but I'm not sure how long I'm here, and if things don't pick up soon, then they don't know what they're going to do. Now, I'm curious as to how the rest of us in the United States and elsewhere, of course, could help, and what are the opportunities? Because here's a city that has a lot of room for new people to come in, and a lot of room, of course, for old people to come back. And you see in the headlines on the New Orleans Times-Picayune today, the Mayor Nagin and Governor Blanco are both urging residents to come back, which got to kind of wonder what they really have in mind, because they're not specific about which residents should come back. People who live in the devastated areas, New Orleans East and the Ninth Ward and Lakeview, and many parts of almost everywhere in the city, really, except for the few areas that were not flooded. You got to wonder, where are these people going to live? And probably their expectation is that very few people will actually heed that call, and so they're just trying to create some pressure for people to come back. But the question is, what can we do to help? And then, what opportunities are there for people to participate in the revival of what is, in my opinion, unarguably a great city? I mean, New Orleans was and potentially could be again a very, very, very great city. And one that has a strong, long reputation of welcoming creativity. And there aren't that many cities that are so conspicuous in that are famous for that. And New Orleans certainly is one of those cities. Is there an opportunity to create a technological combination of technology and creativity? A center for that here in New Orleans, and if so, what would it take to stimulate that? One of my feelings is that the city needs to have a stronger voice. It needs to be heard in a clearer way, and not just through politicians. It's not to say that it shouldn't be heard through politicians, because the city certainly needs the support of the United States government, and financially and militarily, to keep the peace, and the Corps of Engineers needs to be involved, presumably, in the rebuilding of the levees, it needs that kind of involvement. So I'm in no way suggesting that that's not important. But what about the people of New Orleans, and where is the leadership going to come from? I've heard a bunch of people say that Mitch Landrieu they feel that he would make a very natural leader. I've not, of course, not met him, and I don't know anything about him other than he's a son of former New Orleans Mayor Moon Landrieu, and the brother of Louisiana Senator Mary Landrieu. Who else will emerge as a leader of the new Orleans, which is going to have to go through a rebirth much greater than the rebirth of New York after 9/11, where, you know, New York basically was hit very hard, but you know, most neighborhoods in New York were functioning at least at a infrastructure level. People didn't evacuate the city and didn't need to be brought back, and there wasn't, you know, huge reconstruction needed to make the city livable again. Whereas it's utterly impressive as to how much of New Orleans is destroyed. I was trying to get a sense of this. A friend of Ernie the attorney, we call him in the blogosphere, his name, his friends call him, is Ernest Svensson, who's a New Orleans attorney. A friend of his, Rodney, took me around in Biloxi, Mississippi. And Rodney was showing me the places where he lived. You know, that's where I grew up, and that's where my father lived, and that's where my brother and his sister, they almost died, but the house is completely totaled. And Ernie took me through the Lakeview section where he and his former wife lived, and we walked around inside their house, which had been gutted, and they had sold it. They were now divorced, but we walked through it, and Ernie got emotional, I said, you know, I should be able to synthesize this. I should be able to understand the feelings that you have, but I couldn't do it. So this morning, I drove around to some of the places where I used to live in New Orleans, and the ones that were in the Garden District and were uptown were fine, and the places looked more or less as they did when I lived there. But I went to one place that was over on Walter Scott Drive in Jefferson Parish, which is right over the border between Orleans Parish and Jefferson, and that place was totaled. And then I went over to a place that I lived on, State Street Drive, which was on the lake side of Claiborne Avenue, which totally flooded. The house was totaled. The neighborhood was completely devastated. These were nice neighborhoods. They weren't rich neighborhoods by any stretch of the imagination. They were sort of lower middle class, college student housing type places. And then that's when I understood to some extent what it must be like to have the places where you grew up be gone, because I can't really relate, because these were places that I lived when I went to college. Yeah, the emotional attachment you have to a place that you lived in when you went to college must be nothing compared to seeing the place that you grew up and that your family lived. Human beings attached to these things, and I guess it's unusual. We lose people, right? You know, relatives die, but their houses stay behind. And you can go back and visit the houses, you know, 20 or 30 years after the relatives are gone. And it seems kind of ironic that the people are, you know, dust, and the houses are still there, you know, and the houses look fine, no problem. Well, this is the other side of that. This is the flip of it. The people are okay. Not all of them, of course, but the ones that nobody I talked to had anybody close to them who died in the hurricane, which was kind of interesting, because In the Bay Area, far fewer people died in the Loma Prieta quake in the 80s. But it's not uncommon for people to know somebody who knows somebody who died in the quake. I think that's because because earthquakes are more random and they hit they don't I don't want to, maybe I don't want to go into that. I don't understand why that is, but when the neighborhoods go and the houses that you became, the neighborhoods themselves go, and the houses, of course, that are constituent to the neighborhoods go. And that's not something that's in our common experience. It happened a lot in Europe during World War II, but it didn't happen in the United States. And so it's not something that we're all that familiar with. It's not that uncommon, I guess, in the world, but it's pretty unusual here for the US. So I guess where I'm left, the interesting part of this is, and I don't have the answer to it at all, is the question that everybody asks is, well, what does the future look like for these places? And it's hard to imagine what the future of New Orleans looks like. It's easy from afar to say, well, it'll either get rebuilt or it won't get rebuilt. And well, ask yourself that question: do you think it will get rebuilt? And then, if you do believe it will, how long will that take? And then, how will that happen? And then, is this something that you want to play some kind of a part in? Is there some part of the revival of New Orleans that you might find interesting to participate in? There'll be a Mardi Gras coming up. Maybe Mardi Gras this year shouldn't just be about coming here and having a party. Maybe it should be the rest of the country comes to New Orleans and we help New Orleans clean up. We help people in New Orleans gut their houses and cart away debris, take responsibility for a street and just make it sparkle. And then go have a party because you'll have earned that. Maybe that's a way for us. I think that there's a feeling in New Orleans that they're being left to fend for themselves and that that's not fair. And it's not fair. New Orleans is part of the United States. And we'd all like to believe that if the place that we called home suffered the way New Orleans has and is still suffering and will continue to suffer, we would like to think that our neighbors in the United States would help us out. And there's a strong feeling here that that's simply not happening. And what's the right word? I don't want to say I can testify to that, but I guess that's what I have to say, is that yes, that's true. Outside of New Orleans, where I live in the Bay Area of California, there's almost no awareness of the problem here. Yet I think that this is one of two very, very, very huge problems that we face. Well, the other one, of course, being Iraq. And Iraq, it's a conundrum. We don't know what to do about Iraq. But this one, we do know what to do about. And so maybe here's step one towards a national unity or national wholeness or national, whatever you want to call it, national healing. This is a state that was a red state, but the people here are tired of being thought of as a red state. It's not about red or blue, Republican or Democrat now. It's about what do we believe in? And this is like cuts right down to the most basic thing. Is this city going to exist? And if so, when? And then how? And then who will make that happen? And then who will be this city? Who will make up this city? These are all very much questions that nobody has the answer to. So, an interesting beginning to a discussion, and then facilitating that discussion and giving the city itself a voice. I think these are things that I can do to help, and these are things that I want to do if I can, to help the city. Because I did live here, and it gave me an education. It influenced my life in many, many, many ways. And I think that it influenced it for the most part in a very positive way. And I know that giving in a time of need is the bigger gift goes to the person giving doing the giving. One of those little ironies of the human species. So anyway, that about wraps it up. I'm sure I'll do another one. But I would like to see if we can't get some kind of a discussion going here. So anyway, hope you're having a great Friday. And this is Dave Weiner. It's Morning Coffee Notes, December 16th, 2005. Thanks very much.